You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We're back, second half of the program, and we have a lot happening during the next couple of hours. We'll talk more about what happened Saturday night in New York. Let's now talk about what could be going on next year. We are a year away from the playoff, so if the schedule holds up, I believe we will, this week, a year from now, we'll be leading into the first round of the playoffs. The Athletic headline, how the 12-team playoff will comprehend a lot of different things. Chris Vanini joining us from The Athletic. We'll let him tell us more about it since I'm struggling to figure out exactly how it works. Chris, thank you for the time, and you've done a deep dive into what will be topic number one 50 weeks from now. Good afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The idea to write this kind of came after the rankings came out a couple weeks ago and after everybody had said their piece about Florida State not finishing number four behind Alabama. But when you look at it, Florida State is still ahead of Georgia, and we never really got an explanation as to why. Now, it didn't matter this year as to why, but next year, it's really going to matter. Next year, it would have been the difference between playing Liberty in the first round or playing Ole Miss in the first round. So you take the 5-6, you take the 8-9 for the home field spot, you take the 10-11 for the last at-large, the group of five spot. The committee is going to have to answer for a lot more decisions than they have recently. For most years, picking four has been pretty easy. Now they're going to have to defend a lot of other rankings that they really haven't had to talk about before.
Well, one thing we do know, Chris, they're not going to answer for it. They'll throw something up in the air to maybe satisfy a few people. So there's already this narrative being created. It won't be a big deal, as big of a deal. You've answered part of that, and some are trying to shape this as it's like the 65th, or now it's the 69th team in the NCAA tournament. But it's far more complex than that, isn't it?
Yes, because with the NCAA tournament, you're arguing over a team that may have finished like 17-12. This year, the last team that would have been left out was a 10-2 Oklahoma team that beat Texas. You know, like, that's not to say Oklahoma's going to win the title, but they've got a case to make compared to Missouri, Ole Miss, Penn State, those teams that finished as the last couple of teams in. And if you're an Oklahoma fan, if you're a Penn State fan, that's going to matter a lot to you. So we're going to have more of these conversations as opposed to who's in or out at 1-4. We're going to have a lot more debates on a lot of these other things, because if you're 5-6, that's the difference between playing the group of five team or not. That's going to be a big deal. Are you going to get a home field advantage in your first game? So we're just, none of these are going to be as consequential as an undefeated Florida State getting in or out, but we're going to have a lot more of these conversations than we have been having, because outside of the top four, the rest of the rankings haven't mattered for most teams.
Yeah, so we had on the screen, let me make sure the folks on radio understand what it would look like. This is 12, first game, 12-5. That's Liberty, Florida State. Winner gets Alabama. Missouri, Oregon. What an amazing game that would be. Winner gets Michigan. The lower half would be Ole Miss and Georgia, first game. Winner gets Texas. I could go for that. Penn State, Ohio State. And the winner gets Washington. And then you just, so you could argue you're right. And again, Chris, for those who don't understand this, some are saying, well, why is Liberty in there versus Oklahoma? There is a very specific reason. Explain.
Yeah, there are, at the moment, six guaranteed conference champion spots. That was going to be the Power Five plus one group of five. But because the Pac-12 is going away, the commissioners have recommended that to be five plus seven, so five conference championship spots, so four Power Fives plus the group of five team. In most years, that group of five team is probably going to be the number 12 seed as the lowest seed. Remember, we're not ranking 1 through 12 and they're in. You have to be a conference champion to get a bye, and the group of five team is going to be in there as well. So that's why Liberty comes in at 12, even though they were ranked, I think, 23rd or something like that. So that number five spot, getting number five as opposed to number six, is going to be pretty consequential.
So here's where we do enter the deserving versus best, don't we?
Yes. I mean, it kind of already was best deserving or most deserving over four best. This was kind of the first year they really had a difficult decision to make. But yeah, you're going to have a lot of teams that are pretty good teams that feel like, you know, why was Penn State deserved to be in over Oklahoma? They beat Iowa and like, that's it. They lost to Michigan and Ohio State. Oklahoma beat Texas. They lost to Kansas. So like there's a real debate to have that we haven't really had before. And normally when you go on these conference calls with Boo Corrigan after they reveal the rankings, 90% of the questions are about the top four teams and maybe one or two other teams where they're at. Now we're going to have a lot more questions to ask of them because it's going to be the same 12-team committee. They're going to supposedly go through the same process. We don't know if they'll try to avoid rematches or not. So there's a lot more factors. The committee is going to have a much harder job than they really have before, because more of their decisions are going to matter.
There's this feeling out there, go out, schedule anybody you want, it's not going to matter, a couple of losses, not going to matter, but you've already laid out a case that you don't have that much room for error, do you?
Well, you've got some, and that's why in recent years you've seen Ohio State, Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Florida agreed to these bigger home-and-home series. You've got Ohio State, Texas, I think Ohio State, Alabama down the road. Oregon's got some good games coming up. These schools added these games knowing that they could lose one or two to get in. I will say the Alabama, Texas, Florida State situation of this year kind of brings that back to a question of whether or not you should do it. Greg Byrne said, hey, should we be penalized for having gone out and played Texas? Well, Texas benefited from having played you. So these things kind of go both ways. The other part of this is that the conferences are consolidating. Now Oregon is going to be a Big Ten game when it wasn't before. So that kind of changes it too. But these teams want good home crowds, so you got to do better games. And better games, you can afford to lose one or two and usually make the playoff now.
Chris, I realize this is a little bit off what you're saying there, but there was so much controversy among some about Georgia and Oklahoma not meeting. Had they met, do you think it would have made any difference where Georgia landed?
Not really. I mean, if we say Georgia plays that game and wins, Alabama still beat them. I Texas beat Alabama. I don't think it probably would have made it. I mean, you'd probably have Georgia maybe at five instead of six, which you kind of could have made the case for anyway. I think that this year was completely unusual to have so many undefeated or one loss power five champions. We never had that before. Now we're not even going to have a power five next year with the Pac-12 going away. We're likely not going to have undefeated teams. We're going to have fewer undefeated teams moving forward too, because these conferences are going to get a lot harder. You guys just mentioned the Florida schedule that they've got next year. So I think it's going to be everybody's going to kind of have to get used to just having some more losses. So I think if Georgia and Oklahoma had played this year, probably wouldn't have made a difference for Georgia if they'd won, just because of how everybody else turned it out, playing out.
I realize nobody knows, but the idea, here we are in mid-December. You know, some of those games are going to be outside in cold weather climates. I realize that happens every weekend in the NFL, but college football has never been, at least at this level, has never really gone this deep into the season. There's a lot of factors involved, aren't they, in terms of getting one of those lower seeded games?
There are, and it's funny, you watch the FCS playoffs over the weekend, you had Furman and South Carolina go up to Montana and play in the cold. Like, these are things that pretty much every other level of college football have gone through before. They're slowly getting to it. They figured out the hotel situation, they're figuring out travel, they're figuring out the number of seats, where the seats are going to go. There's a lot of logistic things that you'll need to do for these road games or home games for college football to provide more than a typical type of game. But a big part of it is still the television deal and what happens to these first round games. They're still going through that. But you're right, we're less than a year out now. We would be going, next week, this coming weekend, would be the first round next year, 1 week after Army Navy. So like we're down to it, and there's still a lot of logistics and specifics and television situations that need to be hammered out pretty soon.
Chris, I realize a lot of us haven't looked at some of these games, but there are a lot of bowl games Saturday. What happens to them?
They will continue to be as is. They may work around the schedule a little bit more than normal. You might have some more midweek games, but we've always had bowl games leading into the BCS games, leading into the playoff games this year. So it's not unusual to have them. They'll just have more of a greater spotlight. It might be difficult maybe for those first round games. You want to try to get them a window because you've got the NFL moving to Saturday pretty soon too. You're going to have games on Thursdays and Fridays, which is another whole part of that. So the schedule for the playoffs and the bowl games are going to be able to work out. It's really kind of avoiding the NFL is what they try to do.
And Chris, right now you have NFL college football coaches out all over the country. You see pictures on social media, Nick Saban in California, this coach here. Recruiting is next week, as you well know. I'm assuming that stays the same?
I guess. They haven't moved signing day back, and I know there's been a push from a lot of people who want to move it back to February because December has just become so unwieldy. You've got coaches changing jobs, recruiting high schoolers, recruiting transfers, trying to keep transfers from leaving, preparing for a bowl game. It's so much. No other sport does it like this. It doesn't make any sense. And I think one of the easiest things you could do to alleviate that would be to move the signing day back to February or January, kind of like the way it used to be. There's just a lot of factors that we have now that we didn't have when we added the early signing period the first time around. So that's something they keep talking about. It doesn't appear it's on an NCAA proposal this year, but it's something I think a lot of people would like to happen.
Great stuff from Chris Vanini, as always, from The Athletic. Love talking to Chris. We'll take a short break, and we come back with more after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Back. Great to hear from you. And Neil is in Louisiana. Hello, Neil. Hey, Neil. Didn't hear Neil. How about Larry in Florida? Good afternoon, Larry.
Paul, how you doing today?
Doing
I have two things. One, why can't they move the signing and the portal the transfer portal past the bowl game? And number two, why don't they put the players and coaches under contract so they have to finish the bowl season?
Well, I think the second part would be extremely difficult. The first part is not going to happen either And I don't think they're going to move the signing date. And think about why coaches don't want the signing date back to February or the portal. Here's the reason.
Well, they majority, probably want to know
the
what...
The majority of these skill position players, especially quarterback, end up being on the campus on January 1st. And that is critical for their integration into the system with any hope of being a major contributor. And you know, the old days of showing up in August are over.
Right. It's just disappointing. You know, you look forward to your team playing in a bowl game and you don't see the team.
Well, it is, Larry, you're right. But I remember, a couple of years ago when players stayed at the same place for 4 years, they didn't open themselves up for bid every year, which is what they do right now.
It just seems there's too much movement. There's too much money floating around, and it's a business, so why don't we make it a business?
Well, you know? It is a business, and that's why I think there's a lot of snickers in the peanut gallery when you talk to the Charlie Bakers of the world, the president of the NCAA, and they put a specific incident on the word student-athlete. I think it makes everybody feel better, but you're hearing some of the stories, and ultimately we'll start hearing a lot more, but the bidding war that is currently going on for players within programs in the portal would literally shock a lot of you. I talked to a coach the other day, I'll leave it at that, and he said, you would be surprised, and I don't think you surprised talking to me very easily, how bad it is and how mercenary some, not all, but some of these people are, especially the people that are the intermediaries. I'm not accusing the players of trying to heist a coach, but their representatives are doing that right now. Thank you for the call. Logan is up next in Alabama. Hello, Logan.
Hey, Paul. What's going on today, brother? Hey, I got a question for you. I need some help. I got a friend in North Carolina who is a big Florida State fan, and he is we were texting each other during the championship weekend, and he basically said, I told him, I said, you know, if Alabama wins this game, we're going to be in. And he's like, there's no way that's going to happen. They're not going to leave out an undefeated team. And if they do, I'm going to quit watching college football forever. And I was like, dude, no, I wouldn't make that statement, because I think you're going to have to stop watching football. So, he texted me at the Florida State game. He said it was rough. I haven't heard from him since, so I don't know. How can I patch up our friendship, Paul? What can I do to make him feel better about being left out of the playoffs?
Logan, you ever heard this expression before? You're talking to the wrong person.
Because yeah.
There's no way in the world I'm going to waste another breath trying to satisfy a Florida State fan. I mean, some of the things that Florida State fans have said about me, this program, the callers of this program, the commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, the head football coach at the University of Alabama are simply so scary and so far beyond the pale of civility that I don't really care any longer about what that fan base thinks about a single thing on the face of the earth. So if this guy doesn't want to watch college football anymore, who cares?
Right. Well, that's crazy. I didn't know it had gotten that bad. I had no idea. Like, is this on this Twitter? And like,
I never complain about that stuff, because I feel like if you're a public, a lot of my friends in the business do, they get very upset, and that's fine. I've done this for a while, as you know, and but some of the stuff that is out there is, if I made reference to what it reminds me of, I would probably lose my job, so I'm not going to.
Really? Well, you can tell me off the air, Paul, because I had no idea that it was that bad.
Facebook page.
Okay.
Nobody reads that anymore. Logan, I'll never forget. I think it was 30 years ago. Remember 2000? What was it? What year was it? 1994, Randy. You remember August 16th, Major League Baseball went on strike.
I remember that.
Said the same thing. I will never watch Major League Baseball again. Now, about half of them
haven't.
But the NFL went on strike in the late 80s. People can do whatever they want. If you want to deprive yourself as a fan of enjoying the greatest sport on the face of the earth, then go ahead and do it. But the rest of us really don't care.
Well said, Paul. Man, you made me feel so much better now. I'm not even sure that guy's worth being a friend of mine anymore. I mean,
you can be friends with him, but
yeah.
I am tired of getting yelled at. I went around the corner the other day to pick up a smoothie for lunch, okay? I walked in there Friday, and some guy walked in and said, "How in the blank can you say Florida State does?" I mean, I left a smoothie on the counter. I'm out of here.
Paul, man,
I've had this happen to me at least 10 times since last Sunday.
What are all these Florida State fans doing up in Charlotte anyway? That's what I wondered.
Some of the people aren't Florida State fans. That's what's so scary about this.
Oh, well, yeah. They're probably Michigan fans, Paul. They're probably mad at you.
They're people who have listened to these purveyors of hate and false narratives that are out there everywhere that really believe that these young football players, these kids, these children,
right.
One person told me, are being deprived of an opportunity because they did what was asked of them. I mentioned this story 2 hours ago. I went to a Christmas party, and the lady, when I walked in, started yelling at me. And she could forget naming Jordan Travis. She couldn't even tell you what the nickname of the Florida State football team is. That's how ill-informed these people are. And you know what, Logan? We've had enough of it. It ends right here.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
We are back here late in the show, and we haven't talked enough about what happened Saturday night and what it all means. Jaden Daniel winning the Heisman Trophy, the LSU superstar. Article here in The Advocate by Wilson Alexander. We'll talk to Jaden tomorrow. What's next for Jaden? Wilson Alexander joins us, who's covered it all the way. Wilson, first of all, thank you very much. Just let's talk about the moment. It was expected, but a couple weeks ago, it was not. How did Jaden Daniels end up turning everything around, really almost by sitting home to win the Heisman Trophy?
Well, thanks for having me, Paul. It was really a full season of never having a down game. Everything was played at a really high level. And then especially over the last month of the regular season, coming off of the concussion that he suffered in the fourth quarter there against Alabama, it seemed like after that game that maybe he could still be a finalist, but that winning the award was going to be out of the realm of possibility. But then going off for 606 total yards against Florida, following that up with 8 touchdowns against Georgia State, and then leading LSU to a comeback win against Texas A&M, a Texas A&M team that obviously did not have a great season, but had a really tough defense playing as well as he did in the second half. All of that combined with Oregon losing the Pac-12 championship game to Washington seemed to make him the front runner and the favorite And you know, when you look at his whole body of work and compared to all of the other finalists, everybody had great seasons, but Jaden, he just separated himself with 4,946 total yards, 50 touchdowns, and rushing for over 1,000 yards and 10 scores. I mean, he had a fantastic season in so many different ways that he was certainly deserving of winning this and able to thus overcome LSU being a 9-3 team.
The question a lot of people are asking now, and I'm sure it's come up already, is will he play in the bowl game? I don't know if it's the most important thing in the world, but certainly you expect that, do you not?
I would be surprised if he does play in the bowl game, simply because LSU's going up against a 7-5 Wisconsin team. Wisconsin's unranked, and there's nothing else that Jaden really can do at this point to further elevate his draft stock. The only thing that he really does is expose himself to risk. It might be a little bit strange to see a Heisman winner not playing in the bowl, and maybe Jaden will decide that he wants to. But you know, he's been asked multiple times, really since the moment that the Texas A&M game ended, if that had been his last LSU game. He's artfully and respectfully dodged all of those questions. He was asked a few times over Heisman weekend, even right after winning the award, if he planned to play and didn't winning it would impact his decision anyway. And all he said was, we'll see, that he was just trying to enjoy the moment. It was never really advantageous for him to try to go ahead and make that announcement or decision before Heisman weekend. And so I'd expect, you know, him to stay here pretty soon. LSU starts bowl practice this week. And, you know, if he doesn't play, then LSU gets an extended look at Garrett Nussmeier in a bowl game as it heads into 2024. If he does play, then, you know, he sort of has one more possible ride into the sunset. But frankly, he could have, you know, winning the Heisman is a good way to end off a career as well.
Yeah, considering he won the last game a couple weeks ago when it really mattered. Speaking of him, what did you pick up? What are you hearing in relation to April, May, when the NFL draft is held? What does his stock look like?
Well, it's risen in a significant way. Around this time last year, Jaden was told that he would be a mid to late day two pick. The word that NFL talent evaluators kept coming to him with was hesitant. And Jaden believed that he, one, could prove that he wasn't hesitant, and two, he saw himself in his mind as a first round pick. So when he came back and transformed his game completely, so much work that went into the offseason, from, you know, his 5:30 daily film study that started you know, right before the season opener, to the virtual reality training he started doing in the middle of the season before LSU played Mississippi State, and all of the work that he did with his quarterback coaches and to get bigger as well, really paid off and transformed him into someone who sounds like he could be a first round draft pick. And that's another reason that why it seems like maybe he probably wouldn't have anything to gain anyway by playing in the bowl game. And I think there would be nobody, I think, really around LSU would fault him if he doesn't. And so it seems like he could, recent mock drafts have had him anywhere from number 2 to number 7, CBS Sports and with the Athletic respectively. And so that seems, and talking to other people around, LSU in the league, like, sounds like he could really be a first round pick, which is a validation of what he set out to do this season.
We are going to get the entirety of LSU's schedule on sometime Wednesday. It's supposed to be Wednesday night, probably earlier. But we know what LSU has, and we also know what they don't have. And their home games are Bama, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Vanderbilt. The road games, Arkansas, Florida, South Carolina, and A&M. Fairly manageable, in terms of a playoff year. Vanderbilt is always a good team to get on there. Oklahoma at home is pretty good. And the road games, you're playing two teams with coaches three schools with coaches who are really in tough shape related to the future. But let's talk, first of all, Wilson, about the non-conference games. Because one of those, I'm trying to help me out here, because they do have one meaty one, don't they?
They've got two meaty ones. In Las Vegas against USC to open up the season Labor Day weekend, and then they bring UCLA to Tiger Stadium just, I think, 2 weeks later, maybe 2 or 3 weeks later. So they've got, like you said, in terms of what they've got on the SEC slate, it lines up and it seems fairly manageable, because a lot of those games, there may be what you would think are their toughest opponents are at home. But then you factor in two non-conference games against what will then be, of course, Big Ten team. It's a daunting kind of schedule. With breaking in a new quarterback and having to prove that whatever they do on the defensive staff and with their defensive personnel can be better than it was this season, that's going to be a lot. You know, it certainly helps LSU that that's a 12-team playoff next year, because they're going to have a really, at least you would think, looking at all those teams and what they've got in the non-conference, that their strength of schedule is going to be really high.
Yeah, but both SC and UCLA had rather middling seasons, so to me that is an opportunity. I don't know why, just sitting here looking at that schedule, I've got a really good feeling about this LSU team. So give us yours, and really, how does Brian Kelly get this program? It's already been to the championship game, but maybe to that upper echelon of SEC schools that LSU fans, quite frankly, expect.
From a big picture standpoint, it's all about further bringing along this roster to be up there with the Alabamas and the Georgias. And it seems like in terms of top to bottom depth with another recruiting class and whatever else you finish is doing in the transfer portal, that they'll be able to get much closer. But they're losing some of their top tier talent. Jaden Daniels is out of eligibility. Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, their star wide receivers, are expected to go to the draft. And so you would imagine that there's probably going to be some level of regression on the offensive side. And that's completely natural, frankly, with when you lose those kinds of guys and you have a new quarterback. But there's on the defensive side, LSU is going to have to be able to rise up quite a bit in that regard, because LSU's offense carried the team really all season. The defense is going to have to probably be able to make some more plays next year for them to be able to get through that schedule and compete for a playoff spot. It's hard to say exactly what this team is going to look like, because there's going to be, a lot of roster movement. I'm still kind of in wait and see mode, certainly for 2024 next fall, and see how things look as they get through spring practice and all of that. But there's certainly work to be done as they come off a season with such a good offense in order to be able to try to maintain that level and try to continue to get better. Because you would just think that there's going to have to be a little bit of regression on the offensive side. So they're going to really have to pick up the slack on defense. And maybe meet in the middle, and that feels like maybe a natural landing spot for that team.
Fantastic stuff, as always, from Wilson Alexander. Many thanks, Wilson. It's a pleasure to have you on the program, one of the great young reporters in the entire field. We take a break. More to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
And this is something you want to see Wednesday night. America's quarterback, Bart Starr, directed by Fritz Mitchell and Keith Donovan. Charlie is up next. Hello, Charlie.
Hello, Paul. It's really an honor to speak with you.
Thank you.
What I called about was, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago, you were having a conversation about Tim Brando, and it just brought up some thoughts that I had about him. And I feel like my thoughts need to be qualified through a lens of being an Alabama fan. So there's that. I may be the only Alabama fan that really enjoyed listening to him. But during the Mike years, Mike DeBose, Mike Price, and Mike Shula, he was very critical of Alabama. And again, I might be the only Alabama fan to say this, but rightly so. Alabama deserved every bit of criticism they got for the debacle that those years were. But one thing that occurred to me about Tim Brando was that I thought that with Alabama, mostly what he was doing was just stirring the pot to see what would rise to the top. And because Alabama fans would just sort of lose their mind because of things that he was saying, I think that's a big motivation that he had for what he was saying. But I'll sort of conclude all of this about Tim Brando with this, is that into 08, and I can't remember if it was into 09 too, but into 08, he continued with that criticism, even though in 08, Alabama was undefeated and having a really good season. And I think even as late as the LSU game, he was still talking about Alabama like they had no chance to accomplish anything. And I think he was just doing it more out of habit from the previous, 10 years just a lack of success for the Alabama football team. And, of course, Alabama fans just continued to lose their mind during those years. But every once in a while I'll see him, and I'm reminded of how much I did actually enjoy listening to him. I thought he had a lot of good things to say, but I just took the things that he said about Alabama sort of at face value.
Well, Charlie, I've known Tim a long time, and I think some of that started really probably 1988 when he correctly reported at one time that Bill Curry was about to get fired, and then he didn't get fired because there was a change of direction. And Tim was the first guest we ever had on our daily radio show, and he came on to talk about that. And so that was the beginning of it. And one thing about Tim, he was a superb radio talk show host. He was also the first host of College Game Day before they started going on campuses in '93. He was not afraid to poke the bear, but what he did was conduct a compelling show every day, and that was very difficult. He finally left the business, I don't know, about 10, 12 years ago. I can't remember at what point he walked away, but he was probably the first person to do what we're doing here, and that's have a radio show on television. And he later told me that he just couldn't deal with it. He said the fans had gotten so out of whack that he'd had enough. And by the way, I can respect that. He went back to doing what I think he truly loves, and that's play-by-play. But I never felt like he had headed out for any fan base.
No, I think that's part of what I'm saying is I don't think that he ever did. I think some of – and maybe I'm completely misjudging this, and that's fine, but I think one of the things that he was doing, like you said, with poking the bear, I think he just needled the Alabama fan base sometimes just
There are a lot of fan bases around that would be fun to needle, but I can say this with a great deal of experience. Alabama is number one because, I did a nightly show during all of those years, as you probably know, yes. And the unique part about doing a show in Birmingham, Alabama is it's like being a wealth management fund director in New York on Wall Street, where you come out of bonds, you can go into stocks. You come out of high tech, you can go into normal, daily type of need stock, Walmart, Target. What I'm trying to say is you always had another school to lay off on. If Alabama was losing, the Auburn fans were happy. So it was a balancing act. Where Tim was coming in from a different place, and because he once did LSU games, because he used to live in Baton Rouge and still lives in Louisiana, everyone just assumed he was an LSU fan.
That's right, and I remember that as some of the criticism of him, but I never saw it that way.
No,
but
maybe
I'm the only Alabama fan that could tolerate him.
There's a. I mean, there's. I get accused of being an Alabama fan more than any other fan base. And yes, I feel very strongly about Alabama. And for the last 3 weeks, I have been right there with a couple of other people beating the drums for Alabama in the playoffs. But I've also been at the other end of it. And it's just the nature of fandom. It's fascinating. And if you ever believe that a fan base is behind you 100%, look behind you one day and you won't find a single person marching in step.
Yeah, no truer words were spoken.
Hey, thank you very much. But that's fans of every walk of life. It just happens that way because fans are passionate. They care about what they just saw. Dave is up next. Hello, Dave.
Hey, Paul.
Good afternoon.
How are y'all going to add Texas and Oklahoma into y'all's opening theme song?
We are going to do it. And we were talking the other day, Jamari and Daniel and a lot of other people behind the scenes are in that process. I don't think it's going to be that difficult. I've talked to Taylor Hicks about it, assuming he agrees to do it. But you simply just add two more verses.
Why don't you have your
I think the whole thing will have to be redone, but it won't be difficult. But it won't be difficult, but it's also a question we get asked a lot. And you know, I sound like a politician now. We have to, it costs money, and Randy, we're taking up a collection. Okay. How much can you chip in for a new theme song? Randy gives five. Danny? Danny will go 100. Wow. I'll go five with you. So we got $110 right now raised to get a new. And we're open to suggestions. We have not made a final decision yet.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.